Welcome to the second season of the Gutsy Health Podcast with Shanique Roney and Gina Warfel, where we share uncomplicated, practical, and affordable wellness education so you can be a self-healing champion. This episode is brought to you by the Gutsy Health Membership Program, a program that gives you inexpensive tools and resources to heal your mind, body, and soul. Visit our website at mygutsyhealth.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Gutsy Health Podcast. I have in person in the same room as me, Gina Warfel.
Hey, guys.
Welcome. It's so fun that we get to podcast
so together. Way better than Zoom.
You're kind of like nomadic right now, but your home base for the time being is Utah. And I love, love, love it. And what's really fun, we'll just share some personal stories. I'm actually renting out my fairy house, my amazing Provo Canyon. You guys, I love my house so much. Okay. I bought it 5 years ago with Tristan, and it's such a magical house, and I'm renting it out to your sister.
Yeah.
And so you are staying in my house when you come back. You always stay in my house, and how she's decorated it, it's just magic. It's like a magical portal.
Sanctuary.
It is.
You know what's so cool is I've been traveling lately, and I've had conversations with probably three different people, and they're like, oh, where are you staying? I'm like, well, I'm actually in Provo, Utah right now, and I can't tell you how many people have been like, oh, I'm dying to go to Provo. Like, it feels like such a healing place, and I can't wait to just one day I'm going to Provo Health.
That's hilarious.
One day, like, I'm going to make it to Provo Health. And it's actually really sweet. I have a friend who lives in Norway. Mm-hmm. And she's like, it's my goal. It's on my bucket list to like get to the States and come to Provo Health. I'm like, yes, come.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
Yeah.
But the funny thing is, Provo Health is actually in Orem.
Oh.
Isn't that funny? Like, we're literally located Provo Health in Orem, Utah.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Isn't that funny? So it's kind of like this running joke, and I'm too lazy to change the name. But I just feel so honored that people feel that way.
Yeah,
you know,
it's beautiful.
And we're bringing on all these new therapies, neurofeedback, which we're going to be doing a whole podcast on, and IV therapies and ionic foot detox baths to help people detox from molds and heavy metals and like all the things.
It's so beautiful that it's like, it is a healing sanctuary. It doesn't feel like this sterile clinical thing. As I'm looking at you, you have these gorgeous mountains and you feel held by the mountains here.
Yeah.
And just everything feels natural. We have plants all over. It's just
the
so
big windows.
Beautiful. Yeah.
I remember we have a mutual friend, Tiffany, who she owns her own business. And I remember I was talking to her about how to run my business. And she's like, why are you trying to run it like a man? Mm-hmm. She's like, just step into your feminine. And ever since I got that and I stepped into my feminine and I brought feminine energy, because I was running it with Tristan, right? Tristan was such a genius, but then there was just me and I couldn't run it like Tristan. I had to run it like me. And so it's just an extension of my energy, of this like feminine soft, which kind of is a great segue into our topic today, because the feminine energy helps us to understand and provide love to the parts of us that have been neglected, right? And so when I think of Provo Health and running it from a feminine space and training my staff to run from, invite that kind of energy, one, we all have to hold space for where everyone is at and meet them where they're at, instead of like, these are the protocols, this is what you have to do, just get in line and push, push, push. That's so masculine and harsh, and that doesn't feel very healing and inviting, right? Mm-hmm. And so I wanna talk about today, we're not talking about the clinic, what we're talking about today is allowing ourselves to, when we're all on our healing journey, when we are all, whether it's treatment plans, food changes, food restrictions, understanding cravings, understanding self-sabotage, can we step into understanding, right? Instead of saying, what is wrong with me? What's wrong with my body? Can we try to take a step back and invite answers from our higher self and be like, what's actually really happening under the surface? What's the thing under the thing under the thing? Mm-hmm. So when we can understand the layers of maybe self-neglect or mistrust or pain, when we can understand that, we can then actually start healing it from the soul level up versus the cellular level down. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
Here's the thing. If information or having more information equaled healing faster, we would have all healed by now, because there's information overwhelm out there, right? I mean, I just log on to Instagram and in 5 minutes, I'm overwhelmed by the information from all the quote unquote health experts. And this is my realm, right? And I'm overwhelmed just listening to the same things over and over because it's all so dark and heavy, and but it's good information.
It's great. Yeah.
Like, let's listen to all the millions of ways that we can get sick and ill. So if healing was all about lack of information, we should all be healed, but it's not that, right? How are we integrating the information? How are we looking at ourselves and saying, how did I get here in the first place, right?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I was really fascinated with what is the challenge? Because I was on Instagram the other day and I was like, wow, there is just so much information. And so I decided to just ask my audience, like, what do you guys think? What is the biggest challenge? Is it not enough information? Is it too much information? Is it self-sabotage? Is it something else? And it was by a landslide. People were like, I self-sabotage. Mm-hmm. And people sent me messages. I don't understand myself. I always do this. Mm. And it keeps you stuck in these loops, right? When we don't invite a space of deeper understanding. And so just like you said, sometimes it's not always more information, or information is a tool. Mm-hmm. Peeling back those layers. Why is it sometimes hard to stick with what I'm doing? Why do I want to give up? Why do I get in these loops of where I'm motivated and I'm changing mm-hmm. all these habits, but then I quit or I give up or I sabotage it. Mm-hmm. But if we can shift to more curiosity, it becomes a really fun journey of self-exploration.
Right. But how do people start with that? How do we make that switch from the masculine, I need more information to heal, mm-hmm. to the feminine, I need to pause and take a deep breath and actually listen to what's happening in my body?
Well, I think that there's two things. I think one, there is bringing in that gentle curiosity. And I think it's also important that when we say feminine, sometimes it's easy to think of women or girly or whatever mm-hmm. that is. There can be confusion around that. Even just to start, is that feminine is just inviting, like a more nurturing instead of a forward penetrative change that, yeah. that comes with like masculine.
So I make men a joke can practice and be this
as
like,
well. Yes.
The penetrative change, yes. that's masculine. I'm like, that's very sexual of you, Gina.
Well, it is. It's like the masculine is forward. It's penetrating. Uh-huh. The feminine is more like the receiving. Mm-hmm. And it's softer. But this also, we all have masculine, feminine. This applies for men too. And I think sometimes this is a challenge with men because they are in this very mental discipline with maybe missing some of soft nurturing. What does my body mm-hmm. need? So I just want to clarify that in case we're thinking like, oh, feminine equals woman.
No.
Right? So I kind of think of it as two different ways. One is, how do we turn that orientation toward ourselves of, hey, how are we doing? What am I needing right now that you're saying? And also, just an information side of all of that is what actually happens in our brains and our body's chemistry. Because there's actually a science mm-hmm. to self-sabotage, that sometimes you might ask yourself these softer questions, but sometimes the understanding of like what is actually happening in my body can mm-hmm. also be helpful and create more compassion as well.
So I want to pause you there. And that question, what is actually happening in my body? I guarantee you 98% of people have never asked themselves that question.
Right.
When we brought on the mind, body, soul aspect to the Gutsy Academy, which is helping people actually drop into their bodies and listen to like the language of their bodies, this is a completely foreign concept to everyone. Right? Most people have felt so disconnected from their body. Most people are still having, not most, but people are still having a hard time dropping into their body and getting out of, let's talk about the science of that first, right? The sympathetic dominance is go, yeah. go, go, push, 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 cortisol, heightened arousal, right? And so this soft, how do I drop into my body? You have to shift into a parasympathetic state of rest and digest. And not many people can have that shift into a parasympathetic state, right? And so this idea of asking my body what is going on requires you to shift. Mm-hmm. And people have no clue what that looks like or even feels like.
Yeah, well, think about it this way too. We have goals. We might want to change. We might want to get healthier. That's not your brain and your body's number one priority. Your mm-hmm. body's number one priority is to keep you alive over anything. Mm-hmm. So if you are in that sympathetic dominance where your body feels like it's in a state of fight or flight just mm-hmm. because you're stressed, you have a lot going on, or even just because you're making too many changes too fast. Mm-hmm. How many of us have done a new health program because we were motivated and we changed everything overnight? We're like, tomorrow, no sugar, no gluten, no things. Mm-hmm. I'm clearing out the junk. I'm exercising. And all of this we think is like, oh, we're doing good because society tells us do all these things at once. But our brain is like, oh my God, they're
too many changes.
So many changes. It's analyzing this information. Your body doesn't know if you are going into famine or if you're just motivated to get healthier.
Right.
So that if you're in that sympathetic dominance, all of a sudden it shifts your brain's chemistry mm-hmm. to want to get you to self-sabotage to bring you back to homeostasis. Mm-hmm. So we cannot easily make changes if we're fighting our own bodies, our body's instincts to keep us alive.
So if I'm understanding you correct, if we took person A and B, right? And person A is in sympathetic dominance, so fight or flight. Person B is in a parasympathetic state, so rest and digest and heal. And we have them go on the same healing protocol. Let's say it's the liver reset, right? Person B is going to have far better success because their brain isn't interpreting the changes as dangerous and famine. Where person yes. A is like, oh my God, this is dangerous. What a huge change. Cortisol goes through the roof. Am I understanding that correct?
Yes. And person A might not hear those messages. Oh my gosh, I'm going to die, right? We think, oh, well, my brain doesn't tell me that. I had one of my clients tell me, she goes, I don't know why you say my body is in a state of survival. I'm not dying. What do mm-hmm. you mean? Like, I don't have those thoughts. And I realized sometimes we expect to hear that type of message from our brain.
Yeah.
And she was, when we measured her cortisol levels, through the roof. Mm-hmm. And so what I showed her was, you're in such a sympathetic dominance as you're trying to change, you're fighting your body's own instincts and it's really hard. So you're like in survival, you can't lose weight, make changes in survival. Mm-hmm. And she kept saying, what do you mean? I'm not in survival. But what it might actually sound like is, instead of, oh, you're dying, you're in survival, what it might sound like is, oh, I need to actually have that cookie. Mm-hmm. I don't have time for this. I'm overwhelmed. And it's actually these self-sabotaging thoughts that we're more used to hearing. Mm-hmm. And that's a sign that you're like in that sympathetic state, is like your body's actually prioritizing survival when you're trying to change.
Mm-hmm. So that's like, it's food cravings. It's the obsessive thinking of a snack or a certain thing.
Exactly.
And that's the survival. The body isn't saying we're dying. The body is saying we need sustenance. We need replenishing right now. And so you have these obsessive thoughts, correct?
Yeah. So completely different experience. One person who is in sympathetic dominance is going to have all of those self-sabotaging thoughts, where the person who is in parasympathetic, their body will feel more safe. It's going to be a smoother experience.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what I learned that is so fascinating? We're doing all these trainings for neurofeedback right now. And what I am learning, this has all to do with sympathetic dominance and parasympathetic state, right? What I'm learning is that it compares neurofeedback to learning how to ride a bike, right? And this is the best analogy I've ever come across with neurofeedback. When you are learning to ride a bike, if you lean one way, you can feel you're falling and you can auto-correct your body, this check and balance, right? And that's how you learn how to ride a bike, is you lean one way and your brain tells you to move the other way to find center. And you lean the other way and you move your body to find center again. And then you're riding a bike. When it comes to brain waves, when it comes to PTSD, when it comes to stress responses, when it comes to cortisol, because our brains have evolved over millions of years, but the dominant evolutionary state is to survive, right? So our brains are way more adapted to go to fight or flight first and stay there. When you have a traumatic experience, or when you are in a heightened stressed or aroused response, let's say you have a stressful job, right? And you're going to that stressful job over and over and over every day, and you're releasing cortisol, and your brain is creating the brain waves that are keeping you in a sympathetic dominant state, right? There is, once you leave work, there is no autocorrect. There is no rebalance, because the brain is so patterned and designed to look for worst case scenario. Mm-hmm. So it stays there. It doesn't correct. When you have a traumatic experience happen, let's say from childhood, or we mapped my kids' brains this week and it was nuts. And so let's say you're young and you lose a parent, right? And you do this brain mapping on them and they're like through the roof red with their EEGs, right? Their
what
brain
does that
scans.
Mean? The roof red. What does that mean?
Oh, like there's so much imbalance of their brain waves, of the theta, delta, alpha, beta. And you have to have certain brain waves match in certain ways to, if you have certain brain waves act activated in different parts of the brains at different times. That puts you in a parasympathetic state. So rest, digest, and heal. But they don't have that. Their brain is dominantly in brainwave patterns that keep them in a fight or flight response. So here's a really great example. Yeah. And there's no autocorrect. There's no part of the brain designed to be like, we're out of stress. The death is done. Let's go back to neutral.
It's like skiing down a hill and they keep going down the same grooves.
Totally.
Like the same tracks.
Mm-hmm. The same track. And they're stuck in it. That's, yep. And the more that the brain goes down that track, the more it's ingrained. And there's no autocorrect. The brain hasn't evolved to autocorrect itself, which is why it's so important. But again, how do you teach a child to meditate, to breathe, to exercise, right? To help strengthen the other parts of their brain. Exactly, right? We can do a whole podcast on that, but it is very hard.
Okay.
And so that's why it is so easy for all of us to stay in these sympathetic dominant states, because our brains haven't learned tools or haven't evolved to autocorrect back into parasympathetic. They just so naturally and so easily stay in sympathetic dominance.
So neurofeedback be impactful enough to heal the stress response from trauma?
Yes.
Wow.
No, I'm not even kidding. So the more I learn about this and the more I review on the online forums, I kid you not, more than half of the testimonials start with neurofeedback saved my life.
Wow.
And then they share their story. And then the next testimonial is neurofeedback saved my life. I should be dead by now, but I'm not because of neurofeedback, like over and over and over. And what the research is saying and the science is saying that 20 sessions helps with permanent brain changes.
Wow.
Yes. It's phenomenal. And so incredible. It's really cool because neurofeedback is that autocorrect. So you will literally, I want to go back to our original topic, but I just want to get a little geeky right now. So you will put on the things on your brain when you're doing a treatment or a retraining of your brain, and we'll make you watch, like, you know, Inside Out, which talks about sadness and joy. And when your brain latches onto that feeling, neurofeedback will autocorrect it.
Oh my gosh.
Or if you're watching like Finding Dory about abandonment and then your brain lights up, then neurofeedback reads that and it autocorrects.
Wow.
So in the beginning of treatments, you might find that your moods are swinging really big, like a pendulum, but it eventually comes back into a slow neutral.
That's incredible.
Isn't it cool? It's so cool.
Can I share something I just learned from a training?
Yes. Yes.
I just finished this training that is trauma and binge eating certification course. And it was it was really good.
Whoa.
And something that I learned about this mechanism is that if we have any kind of stress, if we go into that sympathetic, which often is from trauma or past experiences or past feelings that are built up, anytime we go into that sympathetic state, what happens actually before that, normally when we're in a parasympathetic state, our body is scanning information, like, have we had enough food to eat? Are we getting all the things that we need, the nutrients? That information travels up the brainstem through our limbic system and then gets processed into our brain. And our brain receives information and it's like, yep, okay, we got these calories, we got this food. When we go into a sympathetic state, if trauma gets activated or we're in that sympathetic dominant state, it actually disconnects the limbic system.
Whoa.
So the information is not getting traveled from your body to your brain to process that you've had enough food or calories or nutrients. And so that process alone will disconnect the information that needs to be sent to the brain. Mm-hmm. And you're most likely going to sabotage, binge eat, grab something because your body thinks that you haven't gotten what
it needs.
It's not
getting that negative feedback loop.
Yes.
Of like, you've eaten enough, let's stop.
Yep.
That feedback loop is destroyed.
It's disconnected from the brain.
That's insane.
Until you come back to a parasympathetic. So if we're in that sympathetic state and we're like, why am I self-sabotaging? It's really hard to not self-sabotage in that sympathetic state.
That makes perfect sense.
Right?
That makes
And it's science.
And here's the thing. It's not about willpower. That's what I learned from your course of willpower will never win because you can't overthrow the power of your own body's chemistry and these signals from body to brain and brain to body. You can't do that. Right? It's impossible. So you have to figure out how to kind of biohack your own chemistry and reroute your brain and reroute your brain chemistry and rewire it through techniques. One of like, people are like, well, do we have to do neurofeedback? Everyone should do neurofeedback in my opinion. But there are things that you can do for free that can really help you, again, get out of that sympathetic dominant state and into healing. And so if you are beating yourself up because you feel like you're eating too much and you just can't do the things and the information is overwhelming, you're in a sympathetic dominant state. Like, be gentle. Mm-hmm. Be kind.
And even if you don't start in a sympathetic dominant state, sometimes changing too much too fast mm-hmm. can put you we'll put into you it. Mm-hmm. Like, if we think about this cycle, most people follow the same pattern if they're self-sabotaging, where they get super motivated and they're like, I'm doing it, yeah. starting tomorrow, cleaning out the pantry, doing all the things. All these changes, because the program told them to overnight. Mm-hmm. And so by making all those changes, that activates the area of your brain known as your amygdala. And your amygdala's job is, we need to keep this human alive. Mm-hmm.
It scans for danger.
Scans for danger. Mm-hmm. So it cuts off that area of your brain where you have willpower, you have rational thinking. You're mm-hmm. like, I can eat the salad. And now all of a sudden it increases your appetite. It increases your cravings. And you're like, you're in this like animalistic like response. Mm-hmm. And I remember being there, because even though I was doing like plans that were based in sound science, I was like, this is so weird. It feels like something took over my brain mm-hmm. and I became like an animal, like prowling for like, where I'm like in this hypnosis. Mm-hmm. And so if you ever feel like you're in that hypnosis, it's a real thing. It's your rational thinking, your prefrontal cortex got turned off. It's like deactivated, and it activated your amygdala, which is like everything survival, fight or flight, seek food. Mm-hmm. And then so we lose control. We get the excess calories, but now your brain received the information. Oh, we've got an abundance of calories now. Now we're safe. Mm-hmm. So then your rational thinking mind comes back online, your prefrontal cortex. And you're like, what did I just do? How could you have done this?
I'm a terribly insecure person, right?
I am horrible. I have no self-control. And then that creates an identity around, well, this just must be who I am. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite authors is Maxwell Maltz. He wrote the book Psycho-Cybernetics. And he said, humans will always behave in accordance to what they believe is true about themselves.
Whoa.
And if you want to change anything, you must change your self-image. Your self-image sets the boundaries for what is possible. It sets your area of possible. If you want to expand your area of possible, you expand your self-image.
That's amazing.
So I think it's an important part.
Yes. I love that, expand your self-image. But what about the people that can't get there because their self-esteem has been so trampled their entire life, right?
All you have is evidence of all I've done is failed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And let's say you had parents that were very critical of you, right? And then that is ingrained in your brain from such a young age, mm-hmm. right? And so how do those people find healing?
I think that it's expanding possibility, because number one, I think this mechanism, if we continue to follow the same pattern, there's a good chance you probably will keep self-sabotaging,
yeah.
right? If you do these waves of extremely motivated, change everything, self-sabotage, there is a science that it does make sense. Mm-hmm. What most people haven't tried is, number one, not letting myself ride these waves of, I'm doing it this time, right? It's actually those motivational spurts that set us up to fail.
Mm-hmm.
Where if your why, which is something, you know, we talk about that we connect to, like if what you really desire, a relationship with yourself, your health, your body goes mm-hmm. really deep, you'll stay in there the whole messy journey.
Yeah.
But if it's a spark of motivation and then a crash, like it's not going to last. So first, I think we can do something different if we behave different, yeah. if we try something different. Mm-hmm. And so I think connecting to that deeper why instead of a spark of motivation. Mm-hmm. And then as you're changing behaviors, does your body feel safe? Is your nervous system regulated? Are you making changes slowly over time? I mean, we take our Gutsy Academy members mm-hmm. through 7 months. Mm-hmm. We give them 7 months to slowly mm-hmm. make changes. If we try to fit a health program into 30 days or 8 weeks,
no,
they would all sabotage
it. It'd be like a 98% failure rate.
Yeah, or they mm-hmm. would do it for 8 weeks and then it would crash.
Totally.
Right?
It wouldn't be sustainable.
It's not what we believe in. It's like the consistent building, right. building.
Well, and I feel like that 7 months, I would say the majority of people aren't really changing their lifestyles, but they're learning a new language, mm-hmm. right? And so they are slowly reprogramming their brain. It's Spanish immersion, right? They just throw in and they have to learn the language. And so they start to pick up on the language. And then after a while, they can speak it and embody it, right? That's what we're doing with the Academy. It's like, here's the language. Start making micro changes, start learning micro things, and they're going to turn into macro things. And then that is reprogramming your brain over time, so that your brain is now in that, I want to use the word language again, mm-hmm. and now you can speak it fluently, and now it actually becomes you, right?
If you know that your diet, if you've been eating a lot of fast food and snacking, and you're not doing the things that you feel like you should be doing, and then all of a sudden you start a program that's like, go gluten-free, dairy-free, sugar-free, mm-hmm. all the things, and it's like, wow, this is a huge, huge mm-hmm. transition. This is mm-hmm. a huge gap. But you immerse yourself slowly and slowly.
Mm-hmm. You know, I want to go back to you talking about the starting a program and being highly motivated, and like the motivation is so sexy and it's so fun and it's exciting. And I want to go back to that movie of Inside Out, that Pixar movie where they have the different emotions in Riley's brain, and there's joy, who's like the main character, there's sadness, there is anger, and I think the other is disgust, right? And the storyline is about joy. She was the dominant character in Riley's brain, right? And she was the one that pushed all the buttons and everything was joy and happiness. And then Riley moves across the country and sadness starts to creep up. But Joy's like, no, don't touch the things. Don't touch, you know, no, you don't belong here. Stay in this circle. Don't do anything. Right. And so, but what actually happens in the end is you find that when sadness takes front and center stage, they're actually able to move through that energy and that emotion. And it actually creates beauty and connection. And like, instead of Riley going to anger all the time, when she actually felt the sadness, she could actually breathe a sigh of relief at the end and find joy again. Mm-hmm. And so sadness and joy started to become opposite sides of the same coin.
Yeah.
And they needed each other. And so going back to my question of what about those people that have never been able to have, that can't create that feeling or can't create an image of their best, highest self, right? And they don't know how to expand their realm of, or they don't know how to expand their understanding of who they are. How did you phrase it? Do you remember that part? Well, what I want to say is, like, I think part of healing, part of learning to not self-sabotage is to feel the sadness, yeah. is to feel how you've been wronged, is to feel the hurt, right? And realize, like, wow, I've lived a hard life. Wow, mm-hmm. I've been through hard stuff, and actually sit in it and hold and actually mother yourself the way you should have been mothered, maybe, yeah. and nurture yourself. And that, like, feeling the hurt will actually allow yourself to actually start feeling the healing. And then you can start forming in your mind's eye the best, a better, higher version yes. of yourself and stepping into that. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And here's what's important to know is sometimes when we identify with that part of us that is struggling and I can't do this, and we start to identify with that, I think what's really important to know is that we're all born our authentic selves. It's also kind of known as like our essential selves or our authentic selves. And that part of us, nothing, it can't go anywhere. It's always there. It can't be taken away. So we don't have to become something down the road. It's already here. And that part of us is open, is curious. It's like if you've ever had that moment, if you can think of a memory where you were just so present and you could be fully yourself. There was no judgment. There was no fear. And you could tap into that feeling. Maybe you were in a safe space to just really be yourself.
Yeah.
That is, like, we all have that and nothing can ever take it away or damage it. And then as challenges come through life, we learn how to get through those challenges. And so sometimes we use different coping strategies, or sometimes they're called survival strategies, or there are different mechanisms that can help us navigate the challenges. So when we go grab a food that wasn't on our plan or our program, or we overeat, it's not who we are. It's a strategy that we learned how to use to get through that difficult situation. Mm-hmm. So that can help around the identity piece. We can think of it as like, oh, right now when I'm grabbing a food and I'm sabotaging, I'm using a coping strategy that I learned to help me get through life.
Yeah.
And then we can get more curious with, like, okay, I'm wondering why I'm using this strategy that's actually helping me. It's mm-hmm. giving me something valuable in life. It's helping, mm-hmm. actually serving. Supporting me. It's mm-hmm. serving me. Yeah. So we can ask ourselves that question too, is like, we want to run away from the things that we don't like, but they've done something for us.
Right.
You know, if we, like, maybe we self-sabotage after a long day of work or something, like mm-hmm. we come home and we grab a bag of chips or something and we didn't mean to. And our goal is to not do that behavior. We're like, I'm not going to eat the chips anymore. And we take that away. Well, what if that was the coping strategy that we learned when we were younger and we came home from school and we're stressed and we need comfort or something to bring down our nervous system?
Mm-hmm.
It's a strategy that we use to take care of ourselves.
Yeah.
Maybe give us comfort or safety or something that felt like a friend. And now as an adult, we try and take away that coping strategy. It's going to be really hard until we look at, oh, what was I using that coping strategy for? Am mm-hmm. I needing the feeling of comfort, pleasure, safety?
Yeah. Self-soothing. It's actually actually a very loving act. We label it as like sabotage, but it's not. It's your brain trying to soothe you. It's saying you had a stressful day. Let's get a quick hit of dopamine and or serotonin, whichever one is the pleasure. I can't remember which one.
Yeah.
But let's get a quick hit of that through this action so that you can self-soothe yourself. It's actually a very, very loving act. And so if we can reframe it that way and like actually be like, oh, thank you. Thank you for trying to soothe me in this moment. And then you can be like, what are some other ways that I can soothe myself?
That little reframe is so powerful. Mm-hmm. In college, I was so fascinated with this. I remember the title of this paper that I wrote in college that was something about self-destructive behaviors. Mm-hmm. And I use those words. How do we get out of the self-destructive cycle? Mm. And I think about, I was so on this idea that this is, why would I self-harm? Why would I do this? Why would I do something to my body that I know doesn't fit my goals? It doesn't feel good. Sometimes you eat these foods you don't like and you feel sick, but you do it anyway. Mm-hmm. But how powerful when I had that reframe of like, wait a second, I'm not trying to harm myself. Mm-hmm. This is a self-soothing. I'm taking care of myself in a time I need it.
Yeah. Yeah. So really what it comes down to, going back to the beginning of the podcast, is it because we don't have enough information? It's not. We have plenty of information. We are just not comfortable yet, or we don't understand that we actually have to just sit with ourselves and sit with the feeling of not feeling, right? We actually have to realize we're actually so disconnected from our bodies. We can't use just mental power to heal everything from the neck down. We actually have to understand how we got to this dysregulation, to this inflammation, to this heightened state of arousal in the first place that inhibits us to actually get into a parasympathetic state, a healing state, and allow true regulation, true chemistry in the body, like proper healthy healing chemistry, to take over to allow us and our bodies to heal again.
Yep.
Because how many people take all the supplements? So let's say you do use willpower, right? They take all the supplements, they do the right, like some of the sickest people that I've worked with had the perfect diet, did everything perfectly, and yet they were still so sick. Why is that happening? Mm-hmm. And it's just because of that dysregulation issue. It's that disconnection issue, right? It's that not actually doing the emotional work to help the brain get on board with the body and allow proper healing signals,
yep,
brain waves, brain chemistry to occur to allow the body to feel safe again to heal.
Yeah, the body has to feel safe in order to heal.
Yeah, you cannot heal a body that is in fight or flight. It's impossible. And people are going to be like, so what do we do now? You know, so a lot of the work is not collecting more information. It's actually saying I have enough. And now I actually have to collect the information from within.
Yeah.
Right. And actually learn the language of my body, the language also, of what it's trying to tell me.
You know, I was really in this tug of war because years ago when I knew I had lots of inflammation, I thought I had a bunch of food sensitivities and my hormones were all messed up. And I'm on one side where I'm like, but I need this information. But then on the other side, I'm like, my body needs safety. And it can be tricky if you're in that tug of war of like, what do I do? I don't think I should eat gluten, but my body's not feeling safe. And and one thing that I think is very powerful is to allow yourself to take the information, but notice the energy, how your body feels as you're making changes.
Yeah.
Does this feel like restriction? Does this make me really anxious? Mm-hmm. If it does, maybe sometimes working on the safety piece is a priority.
Yeah.
Or moment to moment checking in on, does this feel like I'm nurturing my body as I'm making these changes?
Yeah.
Can I calm my nervous system at the same time? Mm-hmm. Whether it's real time using the power of your breath, or maybe it's more of an overtime kind of thing, things like neurofeedback and getting to the root cause of your stress and your sympathetic state. But I think energy behind how you use the information.
Totally. It's funny because when I would do my consults and I do the hair analysis and it has like a food restriction list, all my clients wanted to go to that first. And I said, don't ever look at that list ever again. I don't want you, like, especially if they're new in their healing journey, because their stress response is like, what do I need to cut out? Right? What do I need to restrict? And my approach was, don't look at that. Don't obsess about that. What we need to actually do to heal your body is reintroduce foods and have an energy of we're adding things in, we're not taking things out. Because if you can have the body feel like nothing is restricted, I just need to add more, that's an abundance, right? The body can lean into that. It can feel safe with that.
I love that.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So on everyone's beginning healing journey, I say, we are not going to restrict anything right now.
I love that.
And I'd say that was like 90% of my clients. There were a small 10% where we do have to restrict one or two things, but I don't want to talk about what we're taking out. I want to talk about what we're adding.
Oh, I love that.
Right? Because then the body doesn't shut down. If you take things out, it's the forbidden apple. And it's like, all you can think about is the apple, right? Like, you took the apple away from me. I want it. And so it's like, we're not taking anything away from you. All I want to help you focus on is what do we need to introduce more of, you know? And I say, so I'm not going to tell you to take away the thing that gives you comfort. Let's say you binge eat ice cream every night, right? Because one, it's a soothing mechanism. And two, you're actually really hungry because you weren't eating enough throughout the day. So what I say is, let's add more breakfast. Let's say you have cereal for breakfast. Fine, eat the cereal, but also have your green smoothie and your veggie bowl.
Love that.
Then over time, your body's going to crave the cereal less and less and less because we're going to gently crowd it out.
Right?
We're just gently crowding things out. And so that is healing the body from that energy place of there's abundance and there's enough. And let's use your chemistry to work for you instead of against you. And so we'll gently change your microbiome chemistry and your brain chemistry to crave the thing that you're currently craving less and less and less.
Right. You're just kind of pushing it out. I love that.
Mm-hmm. And then I think that's the physical part. Having your body feel safe. What are other actionable steps that are baby steps that you can do to help rewire the brain to feel safe too? And so this is the homework piece that we can start talking about, because people are like, how do I rewire my brain? How do I get my body to feel safe? How do I do all these things? And we've been slightly vague about those things, but I would say one of the best things you can ever do to rewire your brain is actually move your body.
Yeah. Well, actually, just from a science perspective, I love that you said that, because one thing that we had talked about, we did a podcast a long time ago, and I brought up this really amazing author, Alexander Lowen, who's a psychotherapist, and he talks about the mind-body split of when we're disconnected from our bodies because of trauma or big emotions when we're children. And so we go into our minds because it's very safe in our minds. We don't have feelings in our minds. It's like, it's a safe space. But when you disconnect from your body, now you don't feel true hunger. You don't feel your true fullness. You're like trapped in these safety mechanisms. And he says one of the most important things to heal, to be able to come back into the body, is movement, because you can't live in your mind and move completely.
Yeah.
You can't think, move my arm. You actually have to connect your brain down into your arm and move your arm.
Yeah.
And so any kind of movement, even walking, is like really healing. To any kind of movement is so healing, to start rebonding that connection with the body and starting to tune in. How am I feeling? Am I feeling, is my nervous system activated? What are those sensations feel like? Does my heart start to race? Do I get tense?
Right. And moving in the right way, not over exercising, right? A lot of people are like, let me go over exercise and beat up my body. And it's like, it can be a gentle walk in the mountains. It can be a bar class or a Pilates class or a yoga class where you're stretching and you're moving and you're holding and you're pushing slow and gently, right? Especially when you're in sympathetic dominance, the slow and gentle can help to reframe that, right?
Especially because you're not forcing yourself to do exercise with discipline and push. Like, I remember when I used to exercise, my attention would leave my body and I would try and use music to like escape the feeling so I could push really hard.
Interesting.
But then yoga was more of a tune in to like, oh, how does this make my body feel? How does, where does my body need to stretch? Where does it need to move? And it was like a tuning in instead of a checking out.
Right. I love that. And there is research that shows the more you strengthen your body, the stronger your mind actually gets. With like ADHD or ADD, movement helps to rebalance the brain. And you know how we were talking about those checks and balances? Balances in the brain doesn't actually do it by itself. Exercise can do that.
That makes so much sense.
It's the same reason why when children, I'm reading a lot of books about parenting right now, but when children are young, they actually haven't got that part of their brain developed. When they're angry, they can stop themselves. They can't stop themselves. So when it comes to brain balancing, exercise, that immediate signal of strengthening muscles, stretching muscles, it can strengthen brain. They've done tons of research with Alzheimer's, dementia, and they help to manage symptoms just through exercise alone, because they're strengthening the brain through movement. And so you want want to anti-age your brain, you want to balance your brain, you have to move. Right. And so, but move in a way that honors your body and your energy and your adrenals. Yeah.
And even another thing, so movement is a big piece, and also breathing.
Meditation.
So what's so interesting is little kids learn to hold their breath so that they don't feel their feelings. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons why some people get very emotional in breath work, because that expansion brings you back down into your body and connects the sensation of feelings. Mm-hmm. So if you're holding your breath, you're disconnected from that feeling of, is my nervous system triggered? What is my feelings? It cuts you off from being able to do that deeper self-exploration. Mm-hmm. As you're breathing, which can feel really uncomfortable, especially if sometimes even just breathing can trigger a trauma response. So it's something we have to be really careful and slow with and self-aware, you know, knowing whether this is right for you or not. But being able to expand our chest and take a breath gives us access to our body's feelings, which gives us the ability to learn about, how am I feeling right now? Why am I self-sabotaging? What am I needing?
Breathing, and then also meditation. Research shows that meditation helps to grow gray matter. There's very few things that helps with neuroplasticity and brain growth, but meditation is one of those things, right? Now, isn't it funny if we had to ask our audience right now, like, how many of you are repulsed by the idea of meditation, right? You just sitting still and breathing for 5 minutes, people would be like, nope, I can't do it, right? That's a sign that we need it more than anyone else, right? And that's also another sign of nervous system dysregulation. So yeah, these three things, breathing, exercise, meditation, slowing down, honoring the hurt, going through the sadness to allow joy in. I think this is a reason why so many people don't get to the end of their healing journey, because it's not as easy as just switching one food out for the other. It's actually like doing some soul work and realizing that there could be an ocean of grief and sadness that you are self-soothing to cover, to function. And so if you actually dive into that ocean of grief and sadness, or you dive into that ocean of self-abandon, you know, you have to have some really hard conversations, but it's worth it. It's worth having those hard conversations to get to the other side where healing is waiting for you. And so, how do we want to end this podcast?
I think it's just helpful to start shifting our relationship to why we do what we do from this place of frustration, and there must be something wrong with me, and I can't do it. I don't have enough willpower, which is what our society has told us is the main message, to a much more gentle, curious orientation.
Right.
Of self-exploration. I wonder what I'm needing. I wonder, what is it that I'm doing to take care of myself when I self-sabotage or when I'm making certain choices?
And what am I hiding from myself when I self-sabotage?
What is hard for me to look at that maybe I'll come to with more curiosity and love and compassion? And now that you know the science behind what happens with our brain when we feel stress or an emotion or too many changes at once, it's like, oh, does that grow a little more love and compassion for, oh, that makes a lot of sense. Why it feels like something took over my brain and controlled me. It's because it did. My brain shifted its state. Like, we can keep growing in that love and compassion. And okay, now I want to get a little more curious.
One of my favorite people that we've had on the podcast, Jasmine, she was one of our first Gutsy members from Tristan and I started the Gutsy membership, and it was this teeny tiny little thing. And we interviewed her, and it's such a good interview, you guys. I think we had her on last year.
It was good.
And she talks about how she just made baby changes just here and there. And she's years down now, and she's so much better. But she understood this concept of, like, I can only go slow.
Yes.
Otherwise, I will revert back to all my old ways.
But it feels wrong. Slow feels like, oh no, I'm not doing enough.
Right.
I've been a dietitian for 11 years. And of those 11 years, I've never seen someone successfully, like, really change their life by deciding today it's going to happen and I'll stick to it forever. They've never been able to fully make it a part of their life. But the ones who are willing to feel the pain of like the slow change, they start panicking and they're like, oh, I'm not doing good. I only changed this one thing. And then we get to a place and we're like, actually, it was so easy for you that it felt wrong. And now you look back and you're like, wait a second, my whole life has changed, but it was so easy because it became a part of my life.
Instead it felt natural.
Instead of this heroic thing of like, I'm going to do it. I'm never looking back. So it feels so wrong. But I will say, of the 11 years that I've been working with people around this, the ones who are successful are the ones who are dedicated to building a life.
Yes. And not a diet.
Not a diet. Mm-hmm. A life.
A life.
I'm in this for life, mm-hmm. which comes with the messiness, the self-exploration, the going into the discomfort. It's not just chasing the positivity and I'm good all the time. Mm-hmm. There's so much more value in looking at the things that we're afraid of looking at, which yeah. is why do I sometimes struggle to change?
Right. So in closing, I mean, we've spoken about exercise, breathing, meditation. What I want to invite people to do is actually allow yourself to slow down to maybe hear the voice of your body. You know, that's what we taught people in the Mind, Body, Soul course is, are you listening to your body? Are you slowing down? Are you allowing it to speak to you? And that's a challenge I want to allow everyone today is just allow yourself to drop into your body and be like, what is it trying to tell you? Allow the message to move through you. And it's so fun to see our Gutsy Academy members right now, like share their experiences of their bodies talking to them or their bodies guiding them. Can you get to a place where you're allowing your body to guide your healing versus your mind, right? With the do, right?
We're working together, right?
It's yeah, like they can work together.
The mind knows information. The body gives us the direct feedback, mm-hmm. right? Like maybe together.
Totally, totally. Yeah. Can you integrate them? Listeners, we hope you enjoyed this podcast and we hope that you can be gentle with yourselves as you are trying to figure out the steps to healing. Sometimes slower is better, mm-hmm. you know? Gina, any last parting words of advice before we wrap this puppy up?
I think you nailed it. It's all in the curiosity, the openness, the gentle exploration, and just continue to lean in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lean in. You guys, thanks for listening, and we will catch you next time. Thank you for listening to the Gutsy Health Podcast. We hope you enjoyed and learned a lot from this episode. For more updates, follow us on Instagram @GutsyHealthPodcast.